Now it's working?
Yeah.
Yeah, better. Thanks a lot.
Okay.
Danke. that's the most sex I will have this weekend. thanks a lot for that. Damn it. Now I'm coming over like a completely geek. Like I said, Twitter Storm originated at Twitter or bought by Twitter, but I will not give you any cool insights into Twitter or stuff like that, not affiliated with Twitter. Actually, I'm working at CodeCentric. It fits into my interests. I'm a big data nerd. I'm a Hadoop trainer, as some of you might have noticed. I'm also currently writing a German book on MongoDB, and I'm running the Hadoop and MongoDB user groups in the Rhine-Main area, namely Frankfurt. And for leisure time, I like traveling and, of course, taking pictures there. Yeah. I have to say this, so CodeCentric, my company, basically we are coming from the Java performance area, but are lots into agile stuff, so basically all our company is built on agile principles. We have completely flat hierarchies and trying to lift the agile mantra as much as it's possible with at least 200 people by now, so it's getting more and more difficult, but of course, if you're looking for a new cool job, join us. As always, we're all over Germany. The nearest offices would be Düsseldorf or Solingen here in the area. Feel free. But that's not what I want to talk about today. I want to talk about Twitter Storm. Agenda is pretty simple. First, why am I talking about Twitter Storm? What is Twitter Storm, and what can you do with it? Hopefully, I can answer all these questions for you today. Just, I have seen the slides, sorry about that, but I'm not giving you the whole big data motivation speak again. It's just a short motivation. So we're still in the area of big data. I had a talk on Hadoop. So that's my field of interest. You know, big data is about volume, velocity, and variety. So these are the main motivations why we're calling it big data. So much for it. I've explained it yesterday in my talk. What I want to do today is I want to focus more on the velocity part. So Hadoop, etc., is really great for storing large amounts of data, but it has its downsides, especially when it comes to velocity. This is just one of the popular internet infographics. I think we all know that in one minute on the internet, a lot is happening. So that's the thing you want to take away from here. Just one short example. So we're really dealing with big data, big amounts of data in a really short time. So if you have a look at the Google self-driving car they're currently implementing and testing, you see it's something like 1 gigabyte per second, and all of this data needs to be processed. And in a car, you don't want to process that half an hour later because you need to make a decision. Do I turn left? Do I turn right? So you need to process this data almost immediately. And that's the problem field we have here. It's whenever we're talking about big data, we're always between batch processing and real-time processing. These are two different things. You almost, at least with the technologies we have today, you cannot really combine, you cannot combine it in one technology. So I've talked about Hadoop. Hadoop would be more the batch processing part. You would process the data, but not immediately. It's more like you get the data, put it into Hadoop, and then afterwards you take your minutes, your hours to process the data. And on the other hand, we've seen real-time processing. There's also the need for real-time processing. I mean, talk about web service and stuff like that. For example, if you have a web shop, you have a user in the web shop, you want to track him immediately and see where is he clicking. And if you see a pattern like, okay, now I have a woman here who's clicking at wedding dresses, so maybe I should suggest her something in real time about her wedding or stuff like that. Or can be done. And yeah, like I said, it's nowadays it's actually not possible to combine these two things in one technology. So what usually is being done is something called the Lambda architecture. We have a stream of data coming in, of big data, and one thing you do is on the upper part is it's called the batch layer. That's where Hadoop, MapReduce is coming into the game. You compute your views, your batch views, and then you process them with your technologies. But it takes minutes, it takes hours to compute these views. And you're doing this on all of your big data. On the other hand, we have something called a speed layer. There you digest only the new data that is being generated. And this is a smaller part of all of your data, and you want to compute this in a very timely manner. So here, we're really now speaking milliseconds, process the data, gain some information from it, and then increment your views or whatever you want to show to a user on a website, stuff like that. So that's what we can currently do. Like I said, I talked about Hadoop, so now I'm talking about Twitter Storm. And so just another motivation. So we're talking really about this here. These are like the few hours of data you are absorbing. You cannot absorb with a batch architecture. So this is the focus. This is the data we're talking about, which we are focusing right now. Okay. To sum this all up, a short overview of Storm versus Hadoop. Like I said, Storm is more for the real-time processing. Hadoop is for the batch part of it. One thing is, in Hadoop, we have our MapReduce jobs. They start and they have a timed ending. With Storm, you have a topology that basically runs forever. So you have your stream of data running through your topology. You're processing the data, but the topology itself is currently running long-running processes, and the data is basically processed forever. In the architecture of Hadoop, we have something like a single point of failure, which is in reality not that bad as it may sound, but the architecture in Storm is really robust. We don't have any single point of failure here. Actually, all of the components are completely stateless here, so we'll see about that later when it comes to failure behavior and stuff like that. That's a pretty cool architecture there. And of course, they have some things in common. They're both scalable, they guarantee no data loss, and they are both open source. Good thing I'm at an open source conference using Windows. Okay. I know. Okay, moving towards Twitter, Twitter Storm. When we're talking about Storm, it's basically stream processing. So I think that's no paradigm you haven't heard about before. So it's basically you have a source of data, a stream of data is coming in, and then you process this data in any kind of what you want to do about it. So examples would be, it would be popular, for example, algorithmic trading. You know, all of these, really algorithmic trading where you use millisecond gaps just to make a little gain of it. So all of the big companies, you really have a strong advantage there if you save like 1 millisecond. So everybody is having its computation center as near as possible to the D6, for example, in Frankfurt, just to get that 1 millisecond more. Or in New York, it's the same. We really have a strong real-time need, for example. And of course, as we're talking about Twitter, so what you can do, is, for example, with Storm is something like generating live hashtags on Twitter. Actually, Twitter is doing it itself, but you can do it yourself as well if you want to do. It's a GitHub project. It's just getting the tweets from the Stream API, and then you can process them with Storm as well. But you have to have a look at that on your own. I want to talk about Twitter Storm right now. Okay, here's the reason why it's called Twitter Storm. It was created by Nathan Martz, who is quite popular in the area of big data. He originated it at Backtype, but they were bought by Twitter. I think it was one of the typical American stories. You start your company and with the hopes of being bought by a big one. Here we have it, it's working out. I think he doesn't need to care about money too much. But the good thing for us is Twitter did open source the library. The first version they released was 5.2 or 0.52. And currently we are at 0.8.2, which has been released at the beginning of the year. Nathan is working on the next major version, but yeah, things are slowing down a little bit. But hopefully it will be an Apache project soon, so more people will contribute to it. But nevertheless, it's a very mature project. Lots of companies are using it for productive systems, and it's not just playing around with data, it's earning money with data. When we have a look under the hood, Storm itself is written in Java and Clojure. It's something like, I think 15,000 lines of code Java and something like 7,000 lines of code Clojure. It uses Apache Thrift, of course, and then internally for the message transport. So you have your worker parts and all the communication between your processes is done using CRMQ. I don't know if you're familiar with it, but it's written in Erlang and it's a pretty neat message middleware. And the serialization is done with Cryo, and it has a built-in web server, basically, for monitoring stuff at Jetty, in this case. Let's have a look at the conceptual view. What can we do with Twitter Storm? So when it comes to the architecture, we start with the spout. It's the terminology here. A spout is simply the source of your stream. So a spout is generating tuples. It's generating tuples, which are lists of name value pairs. So think about it, the most common one is really something like JMS messages. You have something like your JMS messages constantly coming in from your middleware broker, something like that. Or you have one short example, it can be a file reader, whatever you can imagine. There are lots of different spouts already available. All the time we're talking about name value pairs here. And then these tuples are forwarded to bolts, and bolts are something like the worker parts in this architecture here. They consume the data, the tuples, and then they may process the data. Basically, you can do whatever you want. It's Java here, so you can filter the data, you can clean it up. It's all up to you. And then you can possibly emit all of these new tuples. So at the end, you build something up like really like a network. So you connect your different bolts together and you route your tuples, your messages between all of these between all of these bolts, and you can do pretty cool stuff with it. But we'll see about that. That was the conceptual view. When we're coming to the physical view, we have again something like a master daemon here. It's called the Nimbus. So it's responsible for distributing the code, for assigning the tasks, and for monitoring stuff, monitoring all the other processes. For the coordination part, we use ZooKeeper. This is another Apache project. It's used, for example, for Hadoop as well. And this is used to keep the state of the cluster. Remember, I said all the components itself, they are stateless, but nevertheless, you need some kind of, to store some kind of state within your Storm cluster as well. So ZooKeeper is used for that. Then we have our supervisors. These are the worker daemons, which which get the work done. They're running on worker nodes, and you have different workers there, and the worker is basically just a Java process which spawns a JVM in an executor, and then it starts your task. That's the task you implement, so it's your spout, your bolt. So much for the physical view of it. And a very simple example, I have to do it again. I did it with Hadoop, so let's see how a word count is doing in Twitter storm. So the idea is word count is just scanning a document, counting the occurrences of words. Very easy, we have a file reader spout. This is basically just ingesting the text file. It emits the line of the files as tuples. Then we have a word split bold, which is separating the line into different words. And then we have a word count bold, which is counting the words and is creating our result as a sorted list. And this, we can have a short look about it. I hope this is big enough. Everybody can see what we're doing here. Okay. So we're starting with our file reader spout. It's quite easy. So it inherits from the base rich spout. It has some methods called ACK and fail. We will talk about that later while we use it. This is for can be used for the message guarantee stuff. Here I'm just using it to print out some information. Nothing fancy here. We declare our output fields so that the next process worker knows what it has to expect from this bold. We have an open method, which simply gets us our file handle. And the thing here is the next tuple method. This is the method we need for generating tuples and emitting them to our bolds. So you see, very basic here. I just read the file line-wise and then emit one line as one tuple. Okay, this line is forwarded to the word split bold. Pretty easy as well. It's implementing from the basic bold. Oh, what a name. And the main method here we need to implement is the execute method. You see it's its input parameters are our tuples. So I just extract the line from the tuple, split it up. Yeah, very basic here. And then I emit every word as one single value. That is forwarded to our word count bold. It pretty much does the same, except that it has an internal map where it stores all of this data, which is prepared. And then in the execute method, I'm not doing anything else than just counting the occurrences of the words. So and I'm again misusing the cleanup method here for printing out some information. Okay, these are all our bits and bolts of our topology, and we need to put them together. That is done in the word count in topology done here. It has to use the main method. You have a topology builder, and there you basically create your network. So I say, okay, the spout of my builder is a file reader spout. I say, okay, the first bolt being used is a word split bolt that we've just seen. I need to define how the data is split between these bolts. We'll see in a second. So of course, this can be run in parallel. So it's in most cases, it's not only one bolt which is doing the processing, the splitting up into words, but it can be any number of processes you want. So you need to define how the data is sent to these different instances of a bolt. Of course, shuffle grouping, you can guess what that is going to do with the data. And then we have our word count bold, which uses a field grouping pretty self-explaining as well. It just does what I need to get all the words with the same key to the same bold to count the total number of occurrences. Then I run my topology. It's pretty easy to run. I have something like a local mode within Storm as well. Usually it's running on clusters in distributed mode and so on, but that makes debugging lots harder or almost impossible. So I have a local mode. This basically just starts all the processes on my local machine, and then I can debug them pretty easy. And now let's see what happens. Not too much, you guess. Okay, these exceptions are expected, so. Yeah, they really are. So it's just instantiating the cluster, and also this one was expected. So you've seen pretty easy here. I stopped the topology here, like I said. In the usual topology, it would really run forever and would be waiting for new input. What we see, this was the output of our, where did I put it out? I think in the spout. So this is the spout emitting the lines. I think I took some Shakespeare text or something like that. Here I see King Lear here. And then this is routed through our bolts, like I just said, and this is the output of the topology. So I get all the different words and the counts of the words. So surprisingly, which is the top one? Oh, come on. And do it like that. Okay, like you would have expected. Here's our most used word in this text corpus. Okay, you've seen pretty basic, pretty easy to implement. Okay, back to the slides. Please go ahead.
you said that the OK messages
yes.
Are coming from the ACK.
Yeah.
But I think the ACK is not when it generates the message, but when it's acknowledged from the last port.
Yeah, you said when did I emit the message about the lines? So I think it was not in the
spout.
It's in the spout, but was I misusing the RCK? Like I said, I'm really misusing it then. You're right. So you wouldn't do this in a real life scenario. It's just for demonstration here. But usually the RCK, I'm not even using the RCK method here. We see about it. What you can do is you can really build a tree out of your messages, and then Twitter Storm is keeping track of all of those messages, of all of those trees, and is making sure that the message will be handled. So, for example, something goes wrong in one bolt, then it can follow back the whole tree of the bolts it has been processed, and can, for example, in this case, something goes wrong, it emits the line back at the spout, and then it's your decision what to do with the data. Throw it away, try again, and stuff like that. And this is really one unique feature of Storm, and that's one of the most powerful features here, because with other solutions, you don't have this message guarantee. You're getting close to it, but that's the only thing here. Yeah, please. Yeah. Good point. Two things here. It's really just an example. So he was asking about I lost my line right here. Okay, how we're dealing with state information here? Thanks a lot. two things here. It's just an example, so it's a really cheap example. It wouldn't work if we have like different instances of our bolts. So having global information within a topology is challenging. And on the other hand, you would use, I mean, all of this is really based, lots of based on in-memory technologies. So it's more or less a design decision. Can you live with the fact that you lose data when your node goes down? In most use cases, you really can live with that. Think about Twitter or something like that. It's really, if you display some tweets or if you don't display it, the user will not even recognize it. But if you really want to guarantee that you have persistency, you would use something like Redis, a simple key value store, to persist all of your data, or can use MongoDB or whatever. And that would be how you would cope with this statelessness. But as always, design decision. But you have the possibility. Another question up there first.
On the answer, you can actually guarantee, because you can change the axe at the end of the last port, you can change the axe together.
Yeah.
And then, only then you can get rid of the original input.
Okay. Yeah, that's something like that, yeah. Yeah, but that's still not covering. So he was saying we can chain all of these messages together, and then Twitter Storm itself, by its message guarantee, is taking care of it. But think about what if the components really go down? If your worker node dies, if your complete cluster dies, they're lost.
Yeah, but in the original spout, you can only remove the, for instance, if you're using a queue, you will only remove it when you receive the ACK from the final port.
Okay.
So that
would be. Okay. You're right. Thanks. Great input here. You wanted to add on that, or was it the same?
That was my question.
Okay. Then please shoot.
you said we have a topology, so it's a bit more like. Can you configure this topology to reflect my physical mode topology in the cluster? Like opening data, for example.
Yes. He was talking about how you can map your virtual topology to your hardware, to your cluster. Yes, you can do all of that. So you can. We see about that in a second. You can give some hints on the grade of parallelism. So basically, what you could do is you really could map your bolts to one physical machine, and then you can decide how many processes, how many threads you want to spawn on this machine. So you can do all of that, but you cannot bind a bolt or a spout to one machine. So I cannot say, okay, this bolt runs only on server 3 or something like that, because that makes no sense at all. Because you want robustness, you want to recover in a failure scenario. So, question answered. Thanks a lot. And now to something completely different. No, we're still talking about Storm. You've seen, just to summarize this, we have groupings here. We have seen two groupings. We have seen the shuffle grouping. We have seen the field grouping. And actually, these groupings are a powerful part of your topology. It really decides what you can do with your topology. And we'll see in an example later why this can be really important. You have something like, okay, send it to all bolts in the topology. You can say, okay, send it global. You can say, send it directly to one specific bolt, and you can shuffle it. I'm messed up there, sorry. But that's the most common one. Maybe I wanted to say that. No one did realize. I think I messed up there as well. It's I was thinking the same right now. What's the difference between all and global? I think, sorry. I messed up there. Let's see. Okay, talking about the key features of Storm. So like promised, Storm promises to be fast and scalable. It should be fault tolerant. It should be guaranteeing message processing. It should be easy to set up. And of course, it's free and open source. And we'll see about that, starting with fast and scalable. Yeah, good thing is Nathan is pretty active. So he's doing lots of performance stuff as well. So he clocked Twitter Storm 0.8.0 at something like 1.6 million tuples per second per node. So you see, we're really talking about a high amount of tuples being processed in a fast time here. And it's getting better and better. So, okay, now this is something about your question here. Of course, also the scalability and is coming from the grade of parallelism we can use within Storm. So, like I said, the bolts, this was a very simple example. So we had just one spout, one bolt, and one word count bolt. But actually, in a regular topology, you would use multiple instances of the bolts or of the spouts as well to process all of your data. And you can do this by giving something like defining the number of tasks and defining the parallelism. So you see, if I would define it something like in the example here, I have something like 16 component instances, meaning spouts and bolts running. These are distributed on our cluster. So let's say we have something like a four-node cluster only, then all of this is distributed by the Nimbus on itself. So you don't have the full granularity, the full control here. And then all of these instances are using different numbers of executor threads in this example, something like 12. So, and yeah, here it comes. This is the really powerful stuff. Everything is stateless, and yeah, you just can scale how much hardware your company can afford. Another thing that's making up the performance of Twitter Storm is the message parsing internally. I already said something about the communication between the threads, between the spouts and bolts. It's done internally using the interprocess communication is done by ZeroMQ and Cairo serialization, which itself are both two pretty neat solutions. So what we have, we get our tuple from another worker. We have a receive thread that is using a receive queue. Then the executor would be our bolt or spout. It is executing is emitting the next tuple, and internally it's routed to a transfer queue. Which then transfers it via transfer queue to the next worker. So, and good thing is the local communication is mediated by an LMAX disruptor, which is really, really fast. And the good and also for all inside transfers, we don't need any form of serialization, which of course makes it faster and more scalable. So, next promise, I promised you fault tolerant. We'll see about that. So if our cluster works normally, we have our components here, we have our Nimbus. The Nimbus is monitoring our cluster state. We have our zookeeper, which is monitoring keeping the state of the cluster as well. And the supervisor itself, it's synchronizing the assignments. It's sending a heartbeat to the zookeeper as well. And it doesn't get a heartbeat via message from the worker, but it really does it only by reading a local file, which also speeds up the process. And then the worker is sending a heartbeat to the zookeeper. So simple heartbeat mechanism here to keep the state of the cluster in mind. So what happens, what can happen? Nimbus goes down, okay? We lost some ability of Storm, so we cannot add new topologies to the cluster, but all the topologies which are still running on the storm cluster, remember, they're running forever. They can continue working without any problem. The only thing is you can do something like a hot reconfiguration of your topology. So let's say now I want not only 4 worker threads, but I want 16 worker threads. You can emit that immediately to a running topology. If the Nimbus goes down, okay, you cannot do that anymore, but it's still running, so that's good. And Nimbus is easy to bring up back again. What happens if a complete worker node goes down? This means a supervisor and our worker are gone. Simple, we have our master node. The Nimbus is simply reassigning those tasks that just got down to another worker node. Cluster can work on. What happens if only the supervisor goes down? This means supervisor is supervising, so worker is still processing our bolts and spouts. So it can work on, but we're losing the synchronization part here. But yeah, not too bad at all. Next thing, if a worker goes down, pretty easy. Then the supervisor is responsible for starting up the next worker process. Remember, it's just a JVM. So start up the next process, go on, and continue to work. So I would call that fault tolerant. I hope you too. What happens if Zookeeper goes down? Damn it, that's a good question. I haven't thought about it, but we can do it together. But you're right. If I do slides like that, I should think about all possibilities. Thanks for pointing it out. Oh, damn it. I have to pay you next time to review my slides. What would we lose by the supervisor? So if the zookeeper goes down, yeah, actually, it doesn't go down. Bear with me, because the zookeeper itself is a cluster on its own. So what you're doing usually is you have a 3-node zookeeper cluster. So then this cluster in a cluster is handling the failover itself. So that's why I didn't think about it. So. I did it. Yeah. Okay. If the internet goes down or died, I don't know. No. And if dinosaurs are coming, then okay. Okay. You get the idea. Guaranteeing message processing. That's what I want to talk about. I already gave some hints about how to do it. So. What you're doing is you're really building a chain of your tuples here. You do this by getting a message ID or generating a message ID on your own, and then you emit the tuple. In the example I had, you were simply just emitting the tuple here without anything else. So now we're emitting the tuple with the message ID, and by that, our tuples are routed through our network each time a message ID is added, so Storm can keep track of the whole path. And then it's up to us. We have something like an ACK and something like a fail method. So if something goes wrong within this path, our tuple would be sent to, sent for example, to our, it would start again at the spout, and then you could decide how to deal with it. For example, you have something like a JMS message. What are you doing with it? You would usually implement something like, okay, retry 5 times, and if after 5 times it's still not working, then discard the message or something like that. And yeah, that's what we're doing here. And of course, you don't only need to do it in your spout, but you also need to do it in your bolt. You see, here we're emitting again, and now, actually, you don't have to emit it, but you have to Azucite, so to keep the chain alive. And yeah, you need to keep the whole chain alive. So if you have one component which is not keeping the chain alive, of course, there our chain ends. For some examples, it might be good. So just keeping track of a short path, not of the whole path through your topology, that's okay. Okay, like you see, we built something up like a tuple tree. We talked about that. Okay, and internally, what is done? Storm has something like an Azucar process. This is running independently by default. I think it's only one process. And if you have a bigger topology, you should always increase this value. And this thread is keeping track of all of these stuff, these IDs. And the implementation is pretty neat as well. So you have something like a tuple ID, a task ID, you have your as a key value, and all of this is done doing by XORing all of the tuples. And at the end, the as a key value will become zero, and that's the signal for Storm. Okay, everything's okay. It worked out as well. So I wouldn't go into the details of the algorithm, but it's pretty smart, and it's actually one of the challenges Nathan had, and he delivered a pretty good solution. So it's not his own solution, but at least he used it. So I promised you easy setup and operation. That's really easy. To set up a cluster, you first install a ZooKeeper cluster that itself is downloading some binaries, setting it up, piece of cake. Then you need to install a ZeroMQ and a library JCMQ, of course, Java, Python. Then you get your latest Storm release and publish it on your Nimbus and worker machines. Not too hard, I think. The only thing you need to do is you need to do some configuration stuff in the Storm YAML. It's basically just telling which machines do I have. So that's the most configuration you need. Of course, you can do some other configuration stuff there as well. Then you launch your daemons. So your Storm comes with launch scripts for the Nimbus part, for the supervisors, and there's an extra one for the UI. It's using internally. And then what you need to do to start a topology, you package all of your code into one jar and submit it to your Storm cluster via Storm jar and tell them what's the main class, what are the arguments being used, and you're done. That's a good question. I think that's used internally by ZeroMQ. I'm not too sure about it. But I think Python is needed for ZeroMQ.
But you can also add some bolts in Python.
Yeah, you could do that as well. Yeah.
So it might be
easier. Huh? Okay, you're using other languages than Java. Is it just Python or?
No, I'm not using Python.
Oh, okay. Good as well. Yeah. Here I know people who say Erlang is easy. I would disagree, but it's just what you're used to. So, sorry. What was that about turning off the mobiles? Yeah. Okay. Then I said you have something like a built-in UI within your Storm cluster. It's pretty neat as well, and you can use all of it's accessible via JMX. So if you have some monitoring solutions like Ganglia, etc., in your company, you can forward all that information to your solution and keep track of the whole topology and the components. It's really it's pretty detailed, so you should be able to cover most of all your monitoring needs with this stuff. Okay, last, okay, this is easy to prove. It's free and open source. Storm is available as a GitHub project. Of course, it's using the Eclipse public license. The user groups are pretty active. Actually, Nathan is also pretty active. So if you have a question, the chances are pretty high it's being answered by him. But it's not only about Storm. Storm is really adapting. So there are lots of different contributions there. It is integrating with all other stuff like Redis, Kafka, MongoDB. You have lots of spouts which are already available. So for CRMQ, ActiveMQ, generic JMS providers, and so on for Kafka. There's pretty much already being available on GitHub, so makes the startup easy. Some good articles, some slides you can have a look afterwards if you like. And what's currently being done is, like I said, current release 8.2. The next major version 0.9 is currently still work in progress. It has some major parts like the pluggable tuple serialization, the pluggable interprocess messaging. It takes some time. I don't know about the release date. And one thing to keep in mind is, already mentioned that Hadoop is also very active. We're talking about Hadoop 2.0, Acar Yarn, and so this is. Trying to establish Hadoop as your big data platform. Currently, you can only do MapReduce on Hadoop, but with Yarn, you can have something like a pluggable structure as well, and then Storm will be one of the plugins. It's already available. You can download it. It's beta and has Yarn as well, but Yarn will be released by the end of the year, hopefully. So this is one thing to keep in mind as well. And actually, the Yarn implementation, of course, is based on Nathan's implementation, but he's not part of the implementation of Storm on Yarn, so that's a different fork there. I wouldn't call it fork. Okay, but now what can you do with Twitter Storm? Actually, that's the reason why I had, that's my first encounter with Twitter Storm. I had an assignment at a web shop. I can say that it was Otto. They're currently rewriting their complete web shop, coming from standard components to their own completely own solution. Code name is Lotse, and it's actually a pretty nice project. You wouldn't expect a lot of agility and stuff like that from a company like Otto, but it was a fun time there, and some really great developers there. And what they're doing is, of course, they have something like a web tracking component, meaning user is browsing the web shop, is clicking all around, and of course, all of these clicks are tracked, and you get all of these data for processing. And the problem they have nothing like a defined page impression. Usually, you look at a page, for example, you look at your wedding dress, and then that's one page impression. But for them, the page consists of different modules. So you have something like a frame. Then you have your box with your description in it. You have your box with your picture in it. You have your recommendation box in it. So and they cannot semantically agree on what is a page impression. So is it a page? Is it one page impression? If a user looks at a wedding dress in white and a wedding dress in black, is this one page impression or are these two page impressions? So they cannot decide. They're doing it afterwards, meaning they log all this data using Varnish, all of this clickstream data, and then for them the the page impressions are of interest, and of course also the session data behind it, because the idea is simple. Like I said in the introduction, if you want to react on the behavior of the user while he still is in the web shop, of course you can do that and gain some data. So users who usually looked at wedding dresses also looked at other stuff. But if you can do that in real time while the user is still in the shop, you can route him to other pages, try to upsell, to sell him more stuff. And yeah, that's what Autodesk is trying to do there. Actually, they're doing it right now. They're using a custom solution with J2E and MongoDB. It's working, and it's generating the data, the page impression and the session data, and the data is being exported into Comscore Docs. It's something like a business intelligence tool to get all of those click paths, insights, et cetera, from your data and to enterprise data warehouse. Yeah, but like I said, solution is currently working. They're not live with the shop, so they only have a rough idea about how the performance will be. Will it be sufficient enough? And one thing is for sure, that solution is not scaling. It's a simple J2E solution, and it's like they implemented it, cannot be scaled. So what we were doing there is we were doing a proof of concept there, and that's the topology we came up with. We start here with ActiveMQ. That's our message provider. We have an ActiveMQ spout, so all of the JMS messages are forwarded to our topology. Then we start with the JMS to message bolt. The idea is you want to keep all of these bolts as simple as possible, so you rather use more bolts than to put all of your functionality in one bolt. So this JMS to message bolt is pretty simple. It's just converting the JMS message to an internal message object Otto has been using right now. Then it splits the data up. So we have something like a parents. These are the frames usually. You simply identify them. There's one ID missing. So if you know one ID is missing, you know it's a parent. The other data is forwarded to the message aggregator bolt. These are like your different components of the web page. And there you have a loop of 10 seconds waiting for other incoming data from that user, also identified by a browser ID tracked from a cookie. And so if for 10 seconds no new data was arriving, then this tuple is forwarded to the parent aggregator bolt. Here at the parent aggregator bolt, we were keeping track of all the parent elements. So we can join the parent and the child elements together. Then the next step would be a product Mongo bolt. This one is communicating with a MongoDB, is enriching the data with some product data, and then here it would be forwarded to Comscore Docs, the one system, and the other system would be the enterprise data warehouse, and this is for a short time session only. And for the internal enterprise data warehouse, we have another aggregation, the session aggregation, which is done in a loop of 30 minutes. So, and then the data is written to the enterprise data warehouse. That's great. I still have 5 minutes left, though. We can have a look at the code. That's what I want to do. Okay. We start with the tracking. Okay, you see what we're doing here is building up the topology. We have our spout, and then it's just building up the network like described here. Is there something important to say? No. There's one part with the parent aggregator. There we have some duplicity in here because we don't know exactly where the child elements are, to which instance of the next bolt they are going. We need to keep track of the parent data on all of the bolts. So this is practically duplicating all of the parent data to all the instances of the bolts, which is not the best option. But yeah, like I said, one of the challenges here is to keep something like a global state here. It was just a proof of concept. So if you want to do a nice solution, maybe you would use something like Redis or something like that to keep a global state. But for the 4 days I had there, it was sufficient enough. And then let's have a look. Where is it? The JMS spout. Okay, this is actually this was one we used from GitHub. So it's just emitting JMS messages as tuples into the storm. Yes, please.
Can you do something like that you always deliver a message that the user, the specific user, always to the same instance, but by maybe hashing the username and then just always forwarding it to the same?
Yeah.
Keep some local data there relates to that user.
Okay, the question was if I can make sure the data is sent always to the same instance of a bolt, and the question, you can do something like hashing, but then you have to deal with the failures on yourself. So if you do something like hashing, and now one node is down and you want to send data only to this node that's currently down, then you would, I don't know if you do yourself a favor, but it's possible. Yeah. So it really, you see, it's all of your code. So you can think of any mechanism you want to how to distribute the tuples there. Let's have a look. What's interesting here? The JMS to message bowl is pretty easy. So one thing that got us into trouble was. You remember there was a 10-second loop gathering all of the data. That was, I don't know if it's the best way to do it. It was working, but probably there are better options to do it. So what we're doing here is basically we're getting the message. We decide, is it a parent element or is it a child element? And then you see we're doing, what are we doing? Bam, bam, bam. So where am I? Sorry.
Looks like you're taking the current time for each ID.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, actually, the problem I wanted to point out. So, okay, you see on your the loop we did it in the prepare method. So, and what we're doing here is we spawned another thread here, as you can see, and we were using a map to keep in track of all the tuples coming in. And here's one thing. We realized by default, Storm should be thread safe. But since the version 0.8, it's not thread safe anymore. Namely, the output collector here, which is used to pass data between the different processes, is not thread safe anymore. So you need a synchronization barrier there. Kind of sucks, but okay.
But you can, if you want to use loop timing and stuff, you can use messages that automatically the token goes.
Yeah, that would be maybe the superior solution. But like I said, this is the solution we came up within 4 days. So hopefully I will get some more time to make it better. Okay. So. Pardon? I didn't. Okay, so you basically want a topology from the spouts and then.
No, I have spouts. So,
yeah? Yeah, of course.
And then aggregate the result of these two to another.
Okay, so what you want to do is you want to distribute the tuples and then join them back together. Yeah, that's totally possible. Yeah.
You have like the barriers and
yeah, you can do that, all of that. Okay. I have the nice guy standing next between me. He's signaling me. I have to shut it down, but lucky for me, I don't have any slides for you. So thanks a lot for your patience. If you have any questions, yeah, we can have a talk after that, and have a great Sunday. Mm-hmm. Thanks a lot. So let's start.